Welcome. Despite progress in many areas, young men of color still face many obstacles to success in terms of education, employment, and other areas. Today, there's growing momentum through government and social sector efforts to improve outcomes for young men of color, including New York City's Young Men's Initiative and the Obama administration's My Brother's Keeper Initiative. A recent report by the social policy research firm, MDRC, reviews what we know about interventions to improve the outcomes of young men of color that have been shown to be effective through rigorous research. To discuss the report, we're joined by one of its co-authors, Dan Bloom, who is a director at MDRC. Dan, welcome.
Thanks, Andy.
Start us off by telling us about the underlying motivation around this topic. What do we know about the struggles of young, less educated men, especially those of color?
I think there are really three interrelated problems. First, over the past 30 or 40 years, our economy has produced fewer and fewer good-paying jobs for workers without a college education, and this trend has been particularly harsh for men. The average male worker with a high school diploma or less actually earns less today than he did in the 1970s after adjusting for inflation, and less educated men are much more likely to be out of the labor market entirely. And these trends have disproportionately affected young men of color. The second issue is that economic trends have been exacerbated by our criminal justice policies. Black males are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white males. And these two issues are closely related because many employers are extremely reluctant to hire people with criminal records. And finally, although there has been some progress in recent years, young men of color continue to lag far behind their white and female peers in our education system. Only half of black boys graduate from high school in 4 years. It's very important that policymakers and foundations are starting to focus on this situation, and we decided to try to contribute to that effort by identifying some programs that seem to make a difference.
And tell us a bit about the studies that qualified for your report. In other words, what were the criteria that you used to include a study in the report?
Okay, so this is not intended to be a comprehensive review of every program that's been tested. What we were doing is we were specifically looking for programs that have been rigorously evaluated and that have shown some positive results for young men of color. And we used a pretty strict standard because we focused on programs that were studied using a random assignment design, which is the gold standard in the evaluation field. This is the same design that's used to test new medicines. It involves comparing the outcomes of people who participate in a program to the outcomes for people who applied for the program but were randomly assigned to a control group that did not participate. We ended up with about 15 programs. Some were studied by MDRC and some were studied by others. And they really fell into two categories. First are what we call proactive models that try to prevent young men of color from going off track, particularly in the education system. And the second group are reconnection approaches that try to re-engage young men who become disconnected from positive systems. So we're talking about young men who've dropped out of school, gotten involved with the justice system, and so on. And the programs try to reconnect them to school or to work.
In the report, you write that, quote, well-targeted and well-implemented programs can make a difference in the lives of young men of color, unquote. Before we get into some of the specifics about these initiatives, what was your overall conclusion in the report?
Well, we were able to find a number of programs that made a difference for young men of color. Most of these programs did not specifically target young men of color, but they were effective for those men. We found programs that improved graduation rates from high school or community college, programs that improved young men's employment outcomes, and programs that reduced recidivism among people in the justice system. Now, none of these programs is a magic bullet by itself. The improvements tend to be fairly modest, but these are very tough problems, and we think these kinds of programs could make a real difference if they were scaled up to serve more people.
So, Dan, in terms of the proactive approaches that you discuss, the report starts out by focusing on those related to students in high school. Give us an example of one of those interventions that was shown to be effective.
So there's a model called Career Academies that was tested by MDRC a number of years ago. A Career Academy is a school within a school that focuses on a career sector like healthcare or finance. And students take their classes in small learning communities, and the school builds connections with local employers in the sector so that students can get exposed to the field through job shadowing or internships. MDRC did a random assignment study in 9 career academies across the country, and this was a very unusual study because we were able to follow students for 8 years after their scheduled high school graduation date. Although academies served both young men and young women, we found that the effects were concentrated among men. men who were in the academies earned about $30,000 more over the 8 years than those who weren't, and they were also more likely to be married and to live with their children. Now, there are thousands of career academies out there today, so that's terrific. But we're concerned that many of them may not have the features of the ones we tested.
The idea is that the connections to employers of these career academies seems to have really mattered.
Exactly. So I think the fact that the career academies were able to connect to the local employment sector and expose high school students to work in that sector, we think that was a key factor in their success.
Yeah. And what about proactive approaches focused on the post-secondary level?
So community colleges are very important institutions. They serve as the gateway to post-secondary education for most low-income and first-generation college students. But dropout rates in community colleges are extremely high. So we evaluated a program called ASAP, which stands for Accelerated Study and Associates Programs. It was developed by the City University of New York for its community colleges. The program requires students to attend school full-time, but it provides a very rich set of services and supports with the goal of helping them graduate within 3 years. Our study's still going on, but the results so far are very impressive. After about 2.5 years, the proportion of ASAP students who had completed their associate's degree was about 15 percentage points higher than the rate for students in the control group. We'll have 3-year results out soon. Again, the program served both males and females, and it obviously didn't target any particular racial group, but the positive results seemed to hold up for all groups. And we're now looking to test this model in other places outside New York City.
Mm-hmm. The name of the program, ASAP, is a useful acronym because in traditional community colleges, the dropout rate can be very high. With ASAP, it's a more condensed approach to community college, among other benefits of the program.
Yeah, I mean, ASAP provides a wide range of services and support. So it's providing financial help for students. It's providing counseling and other kind of supports. It's really putting together all the individual pieces that you think a student might need to be able to stay in school and succeed.
The other set of programs that you highlight in the report are reconnection approaches. Ones, in other words, that are targeted to disadvantaged young men, primarily young men of color, who are at risk of disconnecting or have disconnected from school or work. Give us an example of one of those back-to-school efforts.
So I'm going to talk about the National Guard Youth Challenge Program. It's not very well known, but it actually operates in more than 30 states. The program is run by the National Guard, and it serves 16 to 18-year-olds who've dropped out of high school. About 80% of the participants are male. This program is unusual because it's residential. Participants go live at the program site, which is often on a military base, for about 5 months. And while they're there, they study for their high school diploma, or GED, and they get a very intensive set of supports. The environment in the program is described as quasi-military. The kids get their hair cut short, wear uniforms, do intensive exercise, and so on. But there's no requirement for military service, and in fact, most of the participants do not enlist. When they go home, participants are connected with a mentor in their community for an additional year. MDRC did a random assignment study at 10 challenge programs across the country, and we found some large positive impacts. For example, after 3 years, 72% of the youth who had access to challenge had completed a high school diploma or GED, compared to 56% of the control group. And challenge participants were twice as likely to have earned at least one college credit, and they were also more likely to be working. Partly as a result of the study, Congress increased funding for the Challenge program, but it still serves a very small percentage of all eligible youth.
People who aren't familiar with this program may not realize that the National Guard does this. This is an actual National Guard program.
Yeah, the National Guard has a long community service mission, and this program really fits in with that part of their mission.
Yeah. And what about the other type of reconnection approach, which is a back-to-work effort?
So employment has honestly been the most difficult nut to crack. The challenge program, which I talked about earlier, did increase the employment rate among participants, but they were only 20 years old when the study ended, so there's no way to know what happened over the longer term. The Job Corps, which is the largest residential program for disconnected youth run by the Labor Department, also led to increases in employment and earnings for participants, though the increases faded away over the long term for most participants. We also studied a number of transitional jobs programs that provide temporary subsidized jobs for people like former prisoners and long-term welfare recipients. These programs have generated very large increases in employment, but the increases were driven by the subsidized jobs themselves, and they tended to fade out after the jobs ended. However, one of the transitional jobs programs that we tested, the Center for Employment Opportunities in New York City, did reduce recidivism. And the savings that resulted from preventing some participants from returning to prison or jail were actually large enough to offset the entire cost of running the program.
For listeners who aren't familiar with the term transitional jobs, this is about getting folks some recent work experience on their resume. It could be a public service job or some other temporary job.
Exactly. The idea of a transitional job is to expose somebody to the world of work. It does help them get something on their resume, and it also teaches them how to function in a work environment in a real life situation. So they're learning by doing. They're learning to work by working.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but I'm going to ask Dan about promising ideas that haven't been rigorously tested yet, but that are good candidates for doing so, and I'll post his answer to the blog. But for now, my thanks to Dan Bloom, as well as his co-author, Christopher Weimer, for their insights about this important topic. Dan, always good to see you.
Thank you, Andy. I enjoyed it.